produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Tuesday, April 8th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Get involved in the cannabis civil rights movement and join us here at Normal. You can learn everything you need to know at norml.org. Make a donation, write a letter, attend a rally, march for your rights. It all starts with you. Call your Congress at 202-225-3121. They'll ask for your zip code and put you in touch with your elected officials. It still is a government of we the people, but you have to step up and do your part. Now, Tuesday is Government at Work Day here on the podcast, and coming up after the news, we're going to speak with John Gettle from Arizona Normal. John's got some interesting information on medical marijuana in Arizona and the recent use of immigration checkpoints to catch marijuana users on the southern highways. After that, I've got an acoustic musical break for you. Cannabis Carrie found a nice token tune called One Toke by a songwriter named Dallas Leonard, who records out of the great state of Virginia. I think we all know what he means by one toke, and it sure is nice when you can get it. And to end the show, we have a special treat. Comedian Doug Benson of the Marijuana Logs has a new movie out called Super High Me. It's a take on the Morgan Spurlock documentary Super Size Me, where Spurlock ate nothing but McDonald's for 30 days and chronicled the effects on his life and health. In Super High Me, Benson smokes marijuana for 30 days straight and documents the effects. We spoke with Benson by phone, and he tells us all about it. So sit back and relax with your favorite strain. It's time for your normal daily audio stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Florida teens believe smoking pot will prevent pregnancy. Orlando, Florida. Florida teens who believe drinking a cap of bleach will prevent HIV and a shot of Mountain Dew will stop pregnancy have prompted lawmakers to push for an overhaul of sex education in the state. Another myth is that Florida teens also believe that smoking marijuana will prevent a person from getting pregnant. State lawmakers said the myths are spreading because of Florida's abstinence-only sex education. They are proposing a bill that would require a more comprehensive approach, the report said. It would still require teaching abstinence, but students would also learn about condoms and other methods of birth control and disease prevention. The bill just passed its first vote in a committee. Well, you know, this is the natural consequence of not providing teens with responsible factual information about sex and drugs. Abstinence-only education is the just-say-no approach to teen sexual health, and we all know how well just-say-no got everyone to stop using drugs. It's like a prohibition of biological facts. And for years, we've told kids the reefer madness lies, like smoking pot will cause infertility, which, of course, is why there are no Rastafarian babies, right? Uh-huh. So when we tell them lies about marijuana and withhold the truth about birth control, is the belief that smoking pot prevents pregnancy that surprising? Some parents will complain that sex education belongs at home. That's a laudable goal, but completely unrealistic. Not every child benefits from a loving, stable home with forthright parents, ready to dish about the birds and the bees. So it is more realistic to teach teens about the biological facts about sex and the proper ways to remain healthy. Yes, sexual abstinence at a young age is morally preferable for some, and definitely the safest way to prevent pregnancy and STDs, but should a teen who decides to act on those powerful adolescent hormones deserve an unwanted pregnancy or a death sentence just due to ignorance? Similarly, while we all agree that we'd prefer teens not to smoke marijuana, the fact is that some will, whether it is illegal or not. So should we provide them with the facts, or should we allow their drug ignorance to spill over into sexual ignorance? Both issues come down to frightened adults not wanting to send the wrong message to the young people. They fear if we tell kids about condoms and birth control and that marijuana use isn't so awful and can be medicinal, that somehow we will encourage such behaviors by the kids. Well, instead, the message that we end up sending through abstinence and prohibition is that pregnancies and STDs and marijuana use and abuse are so dreadful that if you have sex and smoke pot, you deserve whatever bad consequence results from your ignorant actions. Mexico gang had James Bond car. Police in Mexico have come across a new weapon being used by the country's drug cartels. A James Bond-style vehicle, complete with gadgets designed to deter arrest. The car was abandoned by gang members after a shootout. The police and army sent to fight Mexico's drug cartels have seen most things, sophisticated rocket launchers, powerful assault rifles, and gold-plated pistols, but in the northern state of Tamaulipas, even they were shocked to come across a Jeep Grand Cherokee kitted out with its own anti-police gadgets. Inside was a smoke machine and a device to spray spikes onto the road behind, the purpose to make a getaway easier and stop the car from being followed. Those in the Jeep threw a hand grenade before making their escape. Well, you know what's funny about this story? Is as I read it, I just couldn't get this song out of my head. What's not so funny is that prohibition forces these renegades into dangerous situations on our roadways. It's not just the pursuing police car that can be driven off the road by a smoke screen and road spikes. I don't recall any beer trucks being outfitted in this manner. Arkansas legislature proposes drug testing for welfare. From Northwest Arkansas News. Two legislative committees authorized on Monday a study prior to the 2009 legislative session of a proposal to require recipients of certain public assistance to undergo random drug testing in order to continue receiving assistance. Those who fail a drug test would have to successfully complete a one-year drug treatment program approved by the State Department of Human Services and remain drug-free during the program. The proposal was submitted by Representative Frank Glidewell and Senator Danny Altus, both Republicans from Fort Smith. The public assistance shall be discontinued if the person fails to complete the drug treatment program or fails to remain drug-free in the program. The House, Senate, and Public Health, Welfare, and Labor Committees okayed the study with no discussion, debate, or questions. Glidewell said he believes that alcohol and or drug problems are, quote, pretty widespread among recipients of public assistance. It may not be their largest problem, but it's a problem that is a sickness like tuberculosis and cancer. If we can help people out by sending them to rehab, I think we are making better citizens out of them, end quote, said Glidewell. Whew, well, beware when your government wants to make something out of you. You know, as I read these news stories about state legislation, I often wonder if they've ever thought through the natural consequences of their legislation. Because it seems to me that only a person motivated by the desire to look tough on drugs in order to win some votes would support such a heinous measure. Think about it, Representative Glidewell. You're a drug-addicted mother of three, working a part-time job, going back to school, and attempting to get clean. You're caught with a dirty drug screen on a random test. Now you're forced into 1 year of rehab. How does that fit in with your work and daycare and school schedule? Then, within the 1 year, you relapse, which happens, and what, your housing, assistance, and family aid money is cut off? You're forced to quit school and maybe even lose your home? Yeah, out of school and homeless with 3 kids, that ought to help the rehab. See, this kind of thinking comes from the paternalism of prejudice. It's the idea that since they receive welfare, they are childlike failures whose lives must be controlled by the state. It's the idea that we can't be subsidizing someone's drug problem. Now, maybe I'm just sensitive to this, because I grew up as a poor child of a drug addict, and food stamps and WIC and state aid were the only thing that kept me fed. And if those had been taken away if my dad failed a drug screen, then why would you want to see child Russ starve because his dad was an addict? This drug testing for welfare is counterproductive. Michigan already tried this and got shot down in the courts. It doesn't reflect any sort of drug problem among welfare recipients, as welfare recipients use drugs at a rate at or below that of everybody else. It doesn't help get welfare recipients off drugs. 6 states have already discovered that mandatory random drug testing for welfare recipients is to be less effective than questionnaires, job retraining, and other methods in detecting and preventing drug abuse. Drug testing, as I described in the vignette previously, distracts from actually solving the problems of low education, low skills, and psychological issues that keep people in poverty and on welfare. And, in my mind, worst of all, as usual, random drug testing is more discriminating to the marijuana user, who may test positive for weeks, than it is to the cocaine, meth, heroin, or alcohol user, who can clean up in a couple of days. Thus, a policy like this would force people away from the safest, least life-impacting drug, marijuana, and toward the harder, more life-impacting drugs. Furthermore, as we know, there are many medical uses for marijuana, and even though it is not recognized in Arkansas, it's not hard to imagine there must be some people in that state using cannabis for medical purposes, even on welfare. Cannabis consumers and producers labeled criminal by the government. But beer industry and consumers celebrate the 75th anniversary of ending beer prohibition. This is a post by Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of Normal, and I thought it deserved some inclusion here on the 75th anniversary of the end of prohibition of beer. On April 7th, 1933, President Franklin D. Roosevelt fulfilled a campaign promise to hasten an end to alcohol prohibition when he signed a modification to the Volstead Act, allowing the sale of 3.2% beer in advance of the formal end to the 21st Amendment being ratified. His reward? The first case of beer delivered directly to the White House. Yesterday, many in the media, including National Public Radio and Bonneville radio stations, such as the top-rated WTOP in Washington, D.C., are highlighting, even touting, both the joy and common-sense wisdom found in allowing beer to be consumed, albeit under some regulations and controls. I enjoy responsibly drinking a well-made microbrew. The act is hardly a criminal one as such, and alcohol prohibition proved an abject failure as a public policy, and the great social experiment lasted hardly more than a decade. However, amazingly, and at terrific cost to the federal and state taxpayers, cannabis prohibition in America has frustratingly lasted over 70 years. Now, tonight, if I were to enjoy some cannabis responsibly in the privacy of my own home, I can be arrested, prosecuted, and incarcerated, along with some other harsh civil penalties, joining 830,000 other like-minded citizens arrested annually in the U.S. Since 1965, nearly 20 million Americans have been arrested on cannabis charges, 90% of those for possession only, costing hundreds of billions of tax dollars. And yet, cannabis is more popular than ever as a cash crop, consumer commodity, and therapeutic. The irony and camaraderie should be clear here. Cannabis consumers and beer drinkers are much more alike than different. Look, I'll raise a glass tonight of a fine American crafted brew, Moylan's Kilt Lifter, brewed in Novato, California. Yum! However, ideally, beer drinkers, crafters, major brewers, retailers, and wholesalers should embrace and rally around cannabis consumers, not continue to vilify cannabis consumers and producers as the major brewers and some wholesalers do, such as Anheuser-Busch and others. Look, beer is a $190 billion a year industry. Beer accounts for 1.7 million jobs in the United States. Over 13,000 labels of beer are marketed by over 1,400 brewers, and there are over 2,700 independent beer distributors. Today's modern beer industry claims that the current state-based regulatory system works just fine and is the near-perfect answer to the concerns in the 1930s about how to best and most safely produce, market, and retail a potentially dangerous consumer product. The beer industry, and the alcohol industry on the whole, highly stresses the need for state, not federal, control. The beer industry lauds its three levels of control and taxation: responsible brewing, responsible regional distribution, and responsible retail. And we say right on, beer industry. In this same vein, the beer industry and its consumers should respect and not oppose the tens of millions of responsible cannabis consumers who seek the lawful use of cannabis, just like the tens of millions of beer drinkers who yesterday celebrated 75 years of a pragmatic and tolerant end to beer prohibition. We'll drink to that.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. When our politicians passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, the citizens of the United States had no idea that a new civil war had begun. Now, after more than 7 decades of this war's escalation and spending well over $1 trillion of taxpayers' money, the result has been an arrest record of more than 37 million brothers and sisters for nonviolent drug offenses. Every year, we choose to continue this war. We do so at the cost of well over $69 billion. Add to this, we are building prisons faster than we are building schools. In fact, the prison industry is now one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. We must end this civil war. We can with your help. Please, join LEAP, the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending the war on drugs. Go to leap.cc and find out how to become a member.
All right, well, it's Government at Work Day here at the Stash. We're joined by John Gettle from Arizona Normal, who's going to tell us all about what's happening down there. So, John, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, Russ.
One of the things that came across our desk here when we were doing some news stories, Alan St. Pierre tipped me off to this, was the use of Border Patrol and immigration services to try to catch marijuana users. Can you tell our listeners what's going on down there in Arizona?
Oh, yes, I'd be happy to, Russ. It's become a big problem with the militarism that's going on with the immigration here in the United States, and nowhere more evident than here in Arizona, where we're, I'm in the town of Tucson, which is about 60 miles from the border. And what we're finding is that the Border Patrol has set up temporary checkpoints in many locations around the state of Arizona, as well as they're trying to set up some permanent locations. And at these stops, they're looking for undocumented immigrants is, I think, their primary purpose, but on the side, they are actively targeting marijuana users, you know, small personal use type people, and going after those with drug dogs and with these checkpoints that stop every single vehicle, and where they look at you, ask you questions, and then move you along if you don't set off some type of alarm to them.
This is their end around the Supreme Court, which decided that random roadside sobriety checks or checks for drugs like that were unconstitutional. But this is the use of the Border Patrol, so they're able to cloak it with the idea that they're somehow stopping, you know, immigration.
That's exactly right, and they're getting around it that way. And luckily, we have a lot of people in the community are upset about it for a number of reasons. Setting up these checkpoints on the roadways, what it does is it causes the undocumented immigrants coming across the border to leave the roadways and go through the desert, which causes harm to them. We have many deaths to the illegal aliens down here, so that is a real problem. The community goes after these checkpoints mainly for that. But what we'd like to do down here, and what we really appreciate from the audio stash, Rush, is bringing awareness to this, the fact that they are targeting recreational marijuana users actively.
So people that are making their road trips this spring and summer, and they might be traveling through the Southwest, what are the major roadways they should be concerned about these checkpoints?
Well, unfortunately, they're doing a lot of these mobile checkpoints where they just they bring some vans and some cones and some heavy weapons, and they set up a checkpoint wherever they really want to.
Mm.
Now, we've got, of course, coming back from Mexico, you always want to be very careful with that. Everybody's aware of that. But what you may not know, what the listeners may not know, is coming in from California on Interstate 8 and Interstate 10, they now have checkpoints that used to just look for fruit. Pretty casual. There was never really any problem with them. Those checkpoints have now been stepped up under the guise of Homeland Security or whatever the guise is this week. But
yeah.
They stepped those inspections up and targeted really unfairly these vacation travelers.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, the stats that they'll rack up from catching people with marijuana is going to be part of how they'll justify continuing the checkpoints. I have a feeling if the previous history is any judge. Now, one other thing we should talk about as far as, you know, this is the government at work day, so we want to talk about medical marijuana and marijuana decriminalization in the state of Arizona. A lot of people don't realize that Arizona actually had a medical marijuana law from 96, but it couldn't be implemented. Is that correct?
That's right. Arizona voters have voted twice to have medical marijuana here in the state of Arizona. Unfortunately, it was one of the first laws that was passed initially, and it was written in such a way that it asked doctors to prescribe the medical marijuana as a prescription. And the DEA came out right after that and said, if any doctors prescribe this, we're going to take away your license to practice medicine.
Right.
And, of course, that put a great fear in the doctors, as it would. And so the law really has no teeth. And we're going to try again. We hope to have another medical marijuana proposition on the ballot for 2010. We'd love to get anyone interested in helping out with that.
Excellent. So what website or phone number could they use to get a hold of you guys and help out there in Arizona?
We've got two ways. You could go to our website at AZ, the number 4, and then normal, N-O-R-M-L. .com, azfornormal.com. That's our website. And we've also got an information line that people can call and has our meeting schedules on it, as well as what we're currently doing. And that's area code 520-323-2947.
Excellent. We'll have links to that up on our Stash blog as well, so people can get in touch. And, you know, it's not all about work. There's also celebration. And, of course, the biggest day in the cannabis community calendar is coming up April 20th, this couple Sundays away, 420. What's happening down in Arizona for 420?
That's right. It's a great day here in southern Arizona. We always love getting together to celebrate April 20th. And we'd love for everyone who's going to be in Tucson that day to come down. We're going to meet at the Safeway grocery store located at Broadway and Campbell here in Tucson. And we'll be meeting there at the northern edge of the parking lot and then walking north to 6th Street where the Chiba Hut, a restaurant here on the west, in the west in California, in Arizona. We have a location here in Tucson at 1820 East 6th Street. And we'll plan on meeting at the Safeway at 4 p.m. and then marching all together with signs, and the patients will, and everybody will be getting together and marching to the Chiba Hut to arrive about 4:20, where we'll have bands and food and information and just a great time. We'd love for everybody to turn out.
It's important that we get people out to these events, even the social events, because this is where the networking happens. This changing these laws is not going to happen from just 1, 2, 3, 4 of us. It's going to take us all banding together. So it's important to show. So get out there for April 20th. Let the people of Tucson know what you feel, and then have some fun afterwards. That's what it's all about.
That's such a great point, Russ. We need... We need everybody really to participate, and we can all help in different ways. And by making an appearance at these functions all over the country, you're making a statement, and it's an important statement. We've got to stand up for our rights and stand up for this injustice that's being done to marijuana smokers.
Absolutely. John, thank you so much for joining us here on the Audio Stash. We'll be back in touch when we've got more Arizona stuff to talk about.
Well, that'd be great, Russ. We're here for you.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Good day, beautiful stashers. Today for our musical break, we enjoy some great acoustic guitar with Dallas Leonard and his musical hit, One Toke. Dallas is a Midwestern troubadour who has played in various rock bands and now is embracing his inner folkster by writing and performing his acoustic music. Originally from Indianapolis, Dallas relocated to Virginia in 2000. I have a deep love for good acoustic guitar, and Dallas does not disappoint with this toker-friendly tune. You can sample and purchase his music on his MySpace page, and for more information on this artist, check him out at music.podshow.com. We've got both of those links up at our Stash blog at stash.normal.org, where you can also get an MP3 download of this song. It's Dallas Leonard with One Toke.
Down by the sea, oceans and waves, paradise so free, Jamaican style leaf. When nature's medicine makes me high, I dream while everything passes by. It's hard to sing when my throat gets dry. Two hits to the brain. I'm one toke away. Planted the seeds. Sample that dream. Two hits for the pain. Of reggae. When nature's medicine makes me high, I dream while everything passes by. It's hard to sing when my throat gets dry. Two hits to the brain.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. For 30 years, Normal has been a voice for those Americans who oppose marijuana prohibition. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
I smoke lots of weed, man. I plant that big old seed, man. I smoke every strain there is in town. From the super sticky green to the headache maxi brown, I smoke every strain there is around.
I know that I like it. I know that lots of people like it. So let's see what happens if you overdo it.
Do we have any pot smokers here today? Do we know?
My name is Doug Benson, and I'm about to get super high.
The term medical marijuana, you've basically, you drank the Kool-Aid, because there is no such thing as medical marijuana.
I'm going to smoke pot every day for 30 days
and try to remember to film it.
And my movie's going to be called Super High Me,
or Business as Usual. I haven't decided yet on the title.
I'm going to be hospitalized, I think.
Some people call it dope. Some think it smells like burning rope. I tell you,
we got a big treat here on the Daily Audio Stash today. We're speaking with comedian Doug Benson. You'll probably remember him best from his performance and writing of the Marijuana Logs, the great troupe that traveled all around the country to deliver the truth and the jokes about marijuana. And Doug's got a new movie out, and so we've got him here from Los Angeles, California, to tell us all about it. Doug, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks for having me. It's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, in fact, I wanted to go see the Marijuana Logs. The show came through Portland, I think it was last year, and Tommy Chong was supposed to be part of the Marijuana Logs. And we got downtown and parked in the parking structure and started to walk toward the venue, and someone coming out of the venue said, no, they canceled it. Tommy got busted, or something to that effect. Apparently,
his
probation officer wouldn't let him do the show, right?
Yeah, basically, I mean, Tommy just got, you know, cold feet because he was still, you know, technically on probation. And when he did the show in New York, he sat in for a few days with us and, you know, it was a theater audience, so everyone was, you know, quite respectful. And but then we went out on the road and we did it one night in Seattle, and, you know, throughout the show, people kept throwing joints up on the stage. And so then the next day in the lobby of the hotel, Tommy was like, I can't go to Portland, you guys, because if that's going to happen at every show, it's just, that's part of my probation, is I can't even be around illegal activity. So he kind of had to bail.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we went to Portland that day and just, you know, didn't do a show. We just sort of hung out and saw Portland and then flew home the next day.
So. Well, that's the risk you take when you come out to the West Coast. We got a little bit of a different attitude out here.
Yeah, you know, it's an attitude I love. It worked out great for me and the other guys in the show, but for Tommy, it was just too dangerous. The last thing that guy wants to do is have to go back to jail.
Oh, yeah, that was so ridiculous. Now, let's get to your new movie out. This is the document. Well, see, is it a documentary? Are we going to call it a pseudo-documentary or comedy? What do we classify this video?
Well, it's technically a documentary, but it's mostly for fun. You know, it's mostly a comedy, but since they did follow me around with cameras for a couple of months, you know, I did a month of not smoking pot at all, followed by a month of smoking all day, every day.
And what's the title of the movie?
What's that?
What's the title of the movie?
Oh, it's called Super High Me.
Super High Me. Kind of like the Morgan Spurlock Super Size Me thing?
Yeah, it's a total ripoff of his thing. It's basically taking his idea of doing something for 30 days, like doing something to excess to see what happens, and just to make it the movie, you know, fair and balanced, Fox News style, I did 30 days of not smoking as well to show what happens there. And it turns out that it's not as addictive as people think it is. Like, it wasn't, you know, that hard for me to quit. Of course, there were cameras there the whole time, so that helped a lot.
Yeah.
But I missed it, but I didn't need it, you know. And then we did 30 days of constantly smoking all day, every day, using a vaporizer, edibles, whatever I could do to just stay high all the time. And during the course of the filming, a couple of dispensaries in Los Angeles, where medical marijuana is sold over the counter, got busted by the feds, because according to federal law, you know, pot is still, I guess I don't need to be telling this to anyone who would be listening to this, but you know, the feds say it's illegal, and the state of California says it's legal. So there's that battle going on, and we actually captured on film a couple of the raids that happened to dispensaries, and it's pretty dramatic. So it's a fun and funny movie, but it's also, it does have some pretty intense scenes in there, and also, like, anyone outside of California, you know, and even people who live in California, they're just not aware of what's going on, that there's so many dispensaries here, there's so many patients, and then that there's also this war that's being waged ridiculously, where the feds just walk in and they, you know, they shut these places down temporarily. They open right back up again because, according to California state law, it's legal. So.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I spoke with comedian Terry Joyce when she was up here in Portland for a benefit. She told me a pretty harrowing story about being in one of the dispensaries as it got raided, having to be, you know, on her knees, handcuffed with a gun to her head. I mean, it's pretty serious stuff.
Yeah, it's intense. I mean, we didn't, in the both of these busts, they didn't really, you know, they didn't cuff anybody that we got on camera. You know, we just filmed it from the outside, but you could just see them taking all the money, all the weed, and then, you know, these places, most of them, they open up again within a few days, you know, because, they have to build up their supply or whatever again. But it's supposed to be legal to sell this stuff to patients, and it should be. I mean, that's the other thing you kind of get from the movie, is that if anyone feels better because of smoking pot and they're not going to bother anyone, why would anyone stop them, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. And so as you went through this filming process, you went without marijuana for 30 days, then you heavily used marijuana for 30 days. What was the biggest difference you found between the 30 days of sobriety versus the 30 days of using marijuana?
Well, physically, I put on a little weight during the 30 days, of course, because of my eating habits weren't so great. So I gained about 8 pounds, but then mentally we did lots of physical and mental tests during the course of the two 30-day periods, just to try to see the difference that way. And in most cases, my scores either remained the same or they improved when I was smoking for 30 days.
It seems to be.
It's pretty interesting. You can't really call it an experiment because there's only one test subject and it's me, so it's more about, like, how I react to this situation. And I've been smoking pot for a long time, and I'm just used to it. I've never been a all-day, every-day kind of smoker, but I thought doing it for 30 days like that would be hard and that I'd be maybe even sick of it by the end. But on day 31 at 4:20, I lit up and had myself a nice...
That's
a nice time. So it's, I certainly didn't learn any lessons in that regard. I still maintain my the same amount of pot smoking I did before we shot the movie.
Okay, so we don't see too many or any downsides from the smoking of the pot. How about the 30 days you went sober? Did you find any downsides from that?
Well, I didn't go into, like, any kind of classic withdrawal or get particularly cranky, you know, like having cameras follow you around for 30 days, that alone will make you
yeah,
a bit cranky. But there's really not much, at least in my case, there's not much evidence that that it's an addiction, and that, you know, like if I were to go into some sort of rehab situation, the pot just not being available makes you not, you know, smoke pot. Like, it's not, it's not like alcohol or heroin or something where you would, you know, kill to get your hands on some, you know?
Right, right. It reminds
me. At least in my case, you know, obviously some people are super into weed and in a way that might be unhealthy, but I don't think it's as bad as people make it out to be, you know? And even Dr. Drew from Celebrity Rehab, he's kind of like, he's sort of taking the stance now that the people that are addicted to pot are the same people that would be, it's like a segment of people that are alcoholics.
Right.
If you're not an alcoholic first, chances are you're not going to be addicted to marijuana, you know, according to him.
Yeah, I always, every time I hear that story about marijuana and addiction, I'm reminded of the scene with Bob Saget in Half Baked. So if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. If not,
yeah,
we're not going to say it over the air. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the video goes here, I understand also this is a part of a promotional scheme that you've been involved in with Normal and some other groups. Tell folks how they can get a copy of the video, where they can see the video. Let's get it out to the people.
We're doing this interesting distribution where, starting on April 20th, 4/20, on that day, and for a month or two after that, anyone can schedule their own screening of the movie. If you have a wall and a projector and a DVD player and 10 friends or 100 friends or 1,000 friends, you can sign up to screen the movie. We will send it to you, and all you got to do is just, you know, go through a couple fairly simple steps on the internet to make it happen, and to get started, you just have to go to superhighmemovie.com. One word, superhighmemovie.com, and then just click on roll your own screenings, and you can set up a screening, or you can click on screenings and just see where there is one in your area, and just attend, you know, RSVP and attend that one.
Oh, that's excellent. Now, so people will be able to put this on for benefits or fundraisers for their local Normal chapter or whatever other organization they might be putting on.
Yeah, basically the idea is, you know, we want people to see it for free. So you can, if you did a benefit, you could let everybody in for free, but then have some sort of raffle or, you know, or sell, obviously you could sell some, you know, lots of snacks to that crowd.
You think?
And you can make some money that way.
That's a great idea. Now, aside from the screenings and going out to the website, is there any plans on distribution to you know, DVD stores or rentals or even having it on the big screen?
It's playing on like on four screens in four lucky cities, one screen in each city. Starting on Friday, April 11th, you can see it in Los Angeles, Portland, Seattle, or San Francisco.
The West Coast,
and
of course.
All those theaters are listed on the website as well, which specific theaters are showing it. And then, of course, it'll ultimately be on DVD on June 17th, and people can put it in their Netflix queue now. It's already on Netflix. You can put it on your list, and then it'll pop up when the time comes.
All right. We'll have links to all of that out at our Stash blog at stash.normal.org for the superhighmemovie.com, and also we'll see if we can get a link out there to the Netflix queue for people and help them out to get that into their mailbox and into their DVD players. And Doug, just on a personal note here, as far as your comedy and comedy career, are you going to be returning with the Marijuana Logs? Are you performing anywhere locally you want to let people know?
Well, I travel around all the time doing my solo stand-up, and every once in a while we try to work in a Marijuana Lugs date, either with the original cast or, you know, one or two members from the original cast with other comedians filling in the other spots. But right now it's mostly solo stuff. On 4/20, I'm going to be doing two shows at the Improv on Melrose in Los Angeles. Those shows are at like 7 and 9 o'clock. And should be a lot of fun. And then, you know, you can check my MySpace page, which is Doug_Benson, or, you know, call your local comedy club to find out, you know, when I'm going to be coming through town. Because I go, I'm in a different city almost every weekend doing my shows and spreading the word about legalizing marijuana.
Well, excellent, excellent. Glad to hear it. And we want to encourage everyone to, you know, contact your local comedy club and support live comedy, especially people like Doug that are going to come out there and tell people the truth about marijuana. You know, there's a lot of truth in comedy, and sometimes comedy is the way that we can get through people's thick skulls, the change that we need to see happen.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm so proud of this movie, because it's a fun movie. People will have a good time watching it, but then it'll also hopefully, you know, teach people a thing or two, you know. I was excited because I went on a show on Fox News called Red Eye, and it's mostly like a comedy show,
mm-hmm.
but they showed the poster from the movie like a couple of times, and it's, you know, and it's me with a bunch of joints in my mouth, kind of like Morgan Spurlock.
Right.
With the poster for Super Size Me. And they showed it a couple of times on Fox News, so I was pretty pretty excited about that to for all the you know, Republicans to have to see my my silly little movie and how you know, how mainstream the whole movement for pot is becoming, you know.
Well, we can make a big stink about this. Maybe we'll get you on Bill O'Reilly's show. I understand he knows a few things about these subjects.
Yeah, he'll tell me what a horrible influence I am on the children.
Well, so was Socrates, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, Doug Benson, thanks for joining us here on the Normal Daily Audio Stash. We're going to point everyone to Super High Me, the movie, and all the good work that you're doing out there. Thanks a lot, Doug.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes. This one comes by way of Sir Paul McCartney. Quote, "I think we should decriminalize marijuana, and I would like to see a really unbiased medical report on it. Society thinks alcohol is terrific, yet it kills. Cigarettes can kill. They're worse than marijuana. It's just not true that marijuana can kill," end quote. Well, Sir Paul, there's a whole bunch of unbiased medical reports on marijuana. You just don't ever hear about them in the American or British newspapers. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for tuning in to The Stash. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for your entire cannabis community. And again, take care of each other, tokers.